Chapter 39 of the Autobiography of Lord Alfred Douglas. This Legamus recording may be distributed and adapted freely for any purpose. Chapter 39. I look back with no satisfaction to what happened directly after my loss of the two cases referred to in the last chapter. I practically lived with D blank E blank for about 3 or 4 months. I saw her daily, first for about a month, and went about with her in a perfectly innocent way. I explained to her that, being a Catholic, I could not consent to lead an immoral life. In the end, however, I deeply regret to have to admit that I succumbed. I got hold of a certain amount of money by selling the books and letters of Wilde, and in advance royalties on the book, English and American Rights, Oscar Wilde and myself. This enabled me to go on living at my partially furnished house in Church Row, Hampstead, to carry on the fight in Chancery about my son, and also to take D about all over the place in London to restaurants and similar resorts. I did this partly out of bravado, and as a demonstration against my enemies, and against my wife, whom at that time I never expected to see or speak to again. I had burnt all her photographs and everything else in the house that might remind me of her. Her father and George Lewis had me followed continually by detectives. D and I used to see them waiting outside my house or her flat and laugh at them. Colonel Custance and Lewis moved heaven and earth to induce Olive to start divorce proceedings against me, but this she absolutely refused to do, and when they tried to put pressure on her, her willpower reasserted itself, and she turned on them with such vehemence that she scared them right off their unholy projects. Less than 4 months after our separation, Olive rang me up one day on the telephone. I answered, not knowing who it was. She begged me to come to see her. The sound of her voice on the telephone completely finished me, and I went straight off to see her, and we made it up. This, of course, caused a breach with Dee, and my irregular life came to an end forever. This was in 1913. Although my wife and I have never lived together again, we are the best of friends. I often go to stay with her, and we keep up a constant correspondence. My reconciliation with Olive was a nasty knock for Custance, and also for George Lewis, who by this time had taken up the campaign against me in a personal and most vindictive way. This campaign he carried on for years. He had already appeared against me in the ransom case and the Custance libel. In the years that followed, he appeared against me again and again, firstly on behalf of Ross, when he got an injunction from Mr. Justice Asbury by which I was restrained from quoting in my book any of Wilde's letters or any part of the unpublished De Profundis in my own defence. Lewis also appeared, of course, as the solicitor for Custance on the numerous occasions when the case of the custody of my son came before Mr. Justice Eve, and afterwards Mr. Justice Peterson in the Chancery Court. See Eve and the Serpent. He then, at the end of 1914, appeared against me at the Old Bailey when I prosecuted Ross, and again when I sued the Evening News in 1922. The Evening News was his Waterloo, as far as I was concerned, but the publication, in 1926, of my collected satires, which contained several scathing poems in which I mercilessly attacked him and held him up, in the legal phrase, to contempt and ridicule, served to remind him that I was still alive and kicking. He died a few months ago, and poor Colonel Custance has been dead for 2 years. I regret very much that it was not possible for me to have a reconciliation with the latter. I long since ceased to have any ill feeling against him, and when he was in his last illness, I told my wife that I would like to be reconciled with him. However, he remained implacable, though, from what he said just before he died, I believe that he recognised that he had done wrong in the line of conduct he had followed in regard to my son, to whom he was devoted, but who, in the end, found out all the real truth about how I, his father, had been treated, and who, of his own accord, wrote to me and asked me to forgive him for what, as a child of 14, and poisoned by lies and misrepresentations about me, he had done himself. Needless to say, I forgave him. I also wish to put it on record that I forgive George Lewis, and it is a fact that for at least 12 years I prayed for him and Colonel Custance by name as my greatest enemies every day of my life. I do not want to go into detail into all the struggle over my son. It would be impossible for me to tell the whole story without appearing to blame my wife, and that I decline to do. I will say, however, that I was never deprived of the custody of my son. The judge, Eve, made a point of this, and seemed to think that I ought to be very grateful for it. But as he ordered that I was to pay all the costs of the boy's schooling, and that during his holidays he was to spend 2/5 of the time with me, and 3/5 of the time with his grandfather, and as, moreover, I had done nothing at all to make me unfit to have the complete custody of my own son, especially considering that all the time he was with me was invariably spent in my mother's house, I could not but think then, as I think now, that I was treated with the most monstrous cruelty and injustice. In the end I got so exasperated by the odious necessity of having to send my son, for the greater part of his holidays, to Colonel Custance, that I took him out of the jurisdiction, into Scotland, where I could defy the English Chancery Courts, being a Scotsman and the son of a Scottish peer. I went to Fort Augustus with the boy, took a house there, arranged with the Right Reverend Sir David Hunter Blair, abbot of Fort Augustus, that my boy should be educated by the monks, and wrote to the judge informing him of what I had done, and that I had no intention of sending the boy again to Colonel Custance, and that I should remain with him in Scotland indefinitely. This, of course, was what is called contempt of court. It was brought up against me, by the way, at the hearing of my libel action against the Evening News, when I got £1,000 damages. The then Mr. Douglas Hogg asked me in the witness box whether I had not committed gross contempt of court. I replied, yes, I committed contempt of court, just as all the apostles did. St. Paul, for example, committed contempt of court over and over again. Mr. Hogg said, you don't compare yourself with St. Paul, do you? To which I replied, well, I don't see why I shouldn't. This reply was received with loud laughter, in which the judge joined. But I went on to add, we are told to imitate Christ, so I suppose we are at least equally entitled to imitate St. Paul. And Hogg had nothing more to say on that point. The English Chancery Courts have, God be thanked, no jurisdiction in Scotland. As long as I remained in Scotland, nobody could interfere with me in any legal way. However, illegality has never been any bar to the late Sir George Lewis. Acting on the instructions of Colonel Custance, he sent a private detective to the hotel in Fort Augustus, where I was staying up till just before the date fixed for my removal into the house I had taken. This man got hold of my little boy while he was out fishing by himself, and carried him off in a car into England. When the boy disappeared, we, that is to say, the monks at the abbey and myself, were all in a state of the utmost consternation and anxiety, thinking that he had been drowned in the loch. For 2 days I was left in ignorance of what had happened. It did not occur, apparently, to Lewis and Lewis, or Custance, that it would be only decent to let me know that the boy was safe and well. I heard nothing at all, and passed 2 days of agony before I got a telegram from my wife telling me that the boy was at Weston, her father's place in Norfolk. Just before the kidnapping, a criminal offence in Scotland, took place, my wife had agreed to come up to Scotland to join me and the boy. So, if the kidnapping had been delayed only a few days, we would all three, father, mother and child, have been living together again in the same house. I went to the police and applied for a warrant for Custance for kidnapping my son. I was referred to the Lord Advocate, who corresponds to the public prosecutor in England. After many weeks' delay, during which my mother joined me in Edinburgh, I was refused a warrant. The Lord Advocate at that time was Mr. Munro Ferguson, a friend of Mr. Asquith. Colonel Custance, for his part, not content with having got my son away from me, went with Sir George Lewis to the Chancery Court and implored Mr. Justice Eve to commit me to prison for contempt of court. This, however, Eve declined to do. He would not have looked very pretty if he had done it, and by this time he had had enough of me and my affairs, and discreetly retired from the case and handed it over to Mr. Justice Peterson. Poor Custance somehow never had any luck in his attempts to get me locked up. He tried three times, but never brought it off. When I came up before Mr. Justice Peterson, he offered to give me back the boy on the same terms as before, 2/5 of his holidays with me, and 3/5 with Custance. But as I now discovered that the boy had been privy to the kidnapping, that he had been secretly corresponding with Custance, and that he had left me of his own accord, I told the judge that I would have nothing more to do with him, and that I washed my hands of him. I did not see him again for nearly 10 years. In this attitude, I was supported by my mother, who shared my indignation at the way I was treated. I was at that time intensely devoted to my son. His loss, and the horrible circumstances of it, completed my sense of the cruelty and injustice of the world. I gave up all idea of happiness in this life, and clung to Catholicism as my only consolation, in spite of the fact that I was very badly treated at that time by most of the Catholics with whom I had dealings, including the monks of the ample 4th Benedictine school, where I had placed my son. The monks had supported me all through my fight for the custody of the boy, but when I definitely renounced the boy, they made terms behind my back with Custance and Lewis. I wrote a sonnet about this, which appears in my collected poems. The end of the whole story is what I have already related, namely, that my son, when he was of age and his own master, wrote and asked my forgiveness, which I of course gave him. Since then, we have been on terms of the deepest affection. The action of my son was a bitter blow to Colonel Custance, and he did not long survive it. End of chapter 39.